Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. It is We the People version on a Thursday. Jenny Swagger checking in. Yes, you still live in Fremont, Illinois, or have you moved? Have you finally seen the light and left Illinois?
I have not, no. No. Were you seeing my interactions with Rob Schneider?
No. I just don't. I applaud your resilience to continue to swim upstream in a state that's been abandoned by logic.
Yes, which is why I find friends outside of our state. Although I've got some really awesome friends in our state, too. But today we are headed to Oklahoma.
No, Oklahoma's coming to us.
Or Oklahoma's coming to us, and we have Brooke Taylor on. Welcome, Brooke.
Hi, thanks for letting me crash your morning coffee party. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
So, Jenny, you are absolutely amazing at getting repeating guests on Rural Route. Kudos to you.
I know. I'm aware. It's natural. But it's been a while, I think.
Well, oh, yeah, it's been a long while.
And a lot has happened, especially in the last 2.5 years for Brooke. The reason we have Brooke on today is we're going to talk about kind of resilience, actually, as you started out by saying, because I don't know if I know another person that's as resilient as she is and what she's gone through. Why don't you start with your story, getting married, falling in love again with your high school sweetheart and all of that.
Sure. Well, first, man,
really
I don't know.
Sweethearts at the time.
Yeah, fair.
So,
when I was on, Trent, when the last time I was on your show, I was here talking about how I had just left the corporate America world. I was launching my own business. I was hosting retreats for rural influencers and helping those in rural America find their voice and navigate storytelling in a raw, transparent way. And since then, I've continued doing that. But, you know, behind the scenes, I was working on my second act of, you know, my transition from Lifetime movie to Hallmark movie. And I fell in love with the right guy. We had an elopement in Big Sky, Montana, in the middle of a snowstorm. You know, I wore winter boots under my dress. It was picture perfect. But what I didn't know was that, you know, while I was growing our child in my womb, I was also growing a cancer in my breast. And I learned that the day that Elsie came into the world, I was diagnosed with cancer. And man, I took on quarantine and a tornado way before the rest of the world did. So I was a little early to the party. But what I found was life is equal opportunity when it comes to hard things. And so just because you've gone through one hard season doesn't mean you're exempt for the rest of your life. But since then, I like to call it the cancer buffet. I've experienced it all. Multiple surgeries, all the chemo, all the poison directly into my veins. And God willing, I am on the other side. And I actually just got my first haircut last week. I cut the mullet off. So I know that that's trendy for the boys these days, but I decided to let mine go. So my grow out hair just looks like I'm a cool mom. But what I found through this whole wild, crazy season is just because bad things are happening doesn't mean you have to have a bad perspective. And so what I've done is bring the real. And I found very early in diagnosis that it was really hard to find someone who was also 32 and a young mother and a business owner and find an example of someone who had walked that path before me. And because I couldn't find anyone, I decided I would leave breadcrumbs behind. And so that's what I did. I shared the real anywhere on social media that people could find, and bald selfies, no makeup, puffy steroid face. I shared it all, and I shared it with a little bit of humor, which is on brand for me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're going to do it, at least have fun doing it. Even if you don't want to be, you know, I was drafted to a war that I didn't believe in and I didn't want to sign up for. But I didn't have a choice, and it knocked it out of the park anyway, fingers crossed. So that's really what I've been doing for the past 2 years. What about you guys?
So Jenny, there's no way Jenny knows this, but I clearly remember the day as a junior in high school when my father told me that my mother had breast cancer, and she beat it and has been cancer free for however many years that is. But my sister, Brooke, at the age of 32, got breast cancer for the second time. She had it at 28, and I guess it was 5 years apart, so 28 and 33. And today she's cancer-free. I have an uncle that had breast cancer, and I'm bringing all that up because all of us have such an exposure to all types of cancer, but particularly breast cancer. And one woman every 3 seconds is diagnosed with breast cancer somewhere in the world. And it takes brave individuals with courage like yourself to stand up and help and be a support system to those that are experiencing the same type of thing, and not just the individuals. I remember the struggle and being the family support of trying to be there for mom or Teresa in that time of need. So I honestly did not know this is what we're talking about, but it couldn't be more appropriate.
So what you just said about the caretaker. So for me, my husband and I have known each other since we were in sixth grade. We were best friends all through middle school, high school, college. Our lives took a different path, and he works for U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So he's lived in Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, working for various refuges, while I was working for advertising agencies in Nashville, Boston, Milwaukee. And we found each other back in Oklahoma around the same time, both single. And it really was like a home where our storylines collided, and they collided in a way where I'm grateful because God had timing set up. But what he didn't know and what he stepped up to the plate is he was an incredible caretaker. He was given a cancer diagnosis and a new baby on the same day that I was. And so for every woman, 1 in 8 who will receive a cancer diagnosis in their lifetime, that's 1 in 8 potential husbands, caretakers, wives, best friends, whoever, who step up to the plate. So I launched an online boutique shop. It was a passion project of mine. And my husband said, can you create a line for me? I want to support you, but what am I gonna wear? And, you know, like, I know that real men wear pink and they'll wear a pink ribbon, and that's great. But I designed a shirt that as a hat tip to him in wildlife and his passion for waterfowl. And I designed a duck cancer shirt that features the pintail, and it's not pink. It represents any cancer, because we know that there's going to be 1.8 diagnoses of cancer in the United States this year. And anyone could wear this shirt and kind of just say, you know, no autocorrect needed. Duck you cancer. I don't want to do chemo today, but I'm going to anyway. And that's really where the inspiration came from. But what's really great and what I'm really excited about is the specific breast cancer that I was diagnosed with is triple negative, which means a lot of people assumed that because I was diagnosed while pregnant, it was driven by hormones. It wasn't. It was not at all. And because of that, any of the commercials you see for prolonged or treatments after chemo, treatments that keep recurrence at bay, none of those are applicable to me for the type of cancer that I battled. My treatment process is pray really big and cross your fingers. And that's it. That's the Wild West that I live in. So 10% of all of these t-shirt lines are dedicated or are directed to the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And what they're doing is they're pushing science and research to really come up with solutions for this very specific type of cancer that targets primarily younger women. So women who are not eligible for mammograms, those are classically those who are diagnosed with this type of breast cancer.
Not eligible, meaning not the typical age.
Not old enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct. And still not old enough for a mammogram.
Right. We were talking about that the other day. Yeah.
What is the age for, well, how old do you have to be suggested to get 40. A man? 40?
40.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Unless, do you ever have, I mean, is it required though if a lump is found? Because I know I began finding lumps before I was 40.
So So I think every doctor and every insurance is different, but I would say that across the board, they'll do an ultrasound. Maybe sometimes, or you're told it's fibrous tissue, or your breasts are preparing to have a baby and it's nothing to worry about. So I would say that there is a lot of room for improvement in the medical field for younger women and breast health.
I actually think you could just leave it with there's a lot of room for improvement in the medical field, Brooke Taylor, my guest. Jenny Swaggart, we are on a We the People Thursday. Neogen is looking at how to be better and find more appropriate genetics, eliminating the surprises. That's really what it's all about, looking at the DNA fingerprint. What alleles are there that is going to make the next generation better for whatever trait or all of the traits that we need, including we will have disease resistance soon. Neogen, shining a light on your genetic future. We'll be back with more Rural Route after this. Welcome back, Rural Route. Trent Luce alongside Thursday We the People with Jenny Swaggart. Brooke Taylor joining us from Oklahoma. Go Pokes. I know Brooke's not a Poke fan. But, you know, we're not going to talk about the Sooners here on the air.
Oh, my gosh. My daughter, she has just recently started walking around the house telling everyone to go Pokes. And I'm not going to say that's my current greatest accomplishment, but it's up there.
Hey, you got to start somewhere. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember the day I had ordered shirts. We were working on a project together, and the color was not
burnt orange,
and she called me up and she's like, I just can't wear this shade. I can't do it. And that was when I started to understand college football. That was my introduction to college football and how hardcore people can be.
Yeah.
But
well, try telling a Poke fan to wear a red shirt on Friday to say thanks to the troops. It never goes good.
Right.
You say that, Trent. On my college campus, there is a Red Shirt Orange Fridays initiative.
I know that.
It's not like a great color palette, but do you have a copy of that shirt? Because I'll send it to you.
I do have a copy. I don't know exactly where it's at, but someone has sent it to me before. I'll take another one.
Nice.
Yes. I don't have it. I don't wear t-shirts, but these are all t-shirts, Brooke.
Mm-hmm. They are. Well, there's a few hoodies and I'm always adding to the shop every day.
That would actually look really great with
your wild rag, probably, Trent.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to be wearing a tank top, just saying.
Okay. Oh, but it's got a cute razor back. It's really...
A what back? Why would I put a razor on my back?
So I did, in this design, I did include a zip hoodie. And the reason for that, because I know it's summertime, why would you add a hoodie to your shop? It's hot, especially here in Oklahoma. But the kicker is, if 1.8 million people are going to be diagnosed with cancer this year, that's a potential for a high percentage of people who will be sitting in a chemo chair. And one of the things that you should know about a lot of chemos is some of them can't go directly into your vein because they are too severe, which means you have port access. And to get access your port, you have to have access to this region. So for me, a zip hoodie was imperative during chemo. So you have easy port access, which is why I included it in the shop. So you can tell cancer to duck off and still get treatment.
So, Brooke, as easy as it is for all of us, including me, to be critical of the medical community today, particularly from a breast cancer standpoint, there have been massive improvements, particularly in quality of life after being diagnosed with breast cancer. So we have to give credit where credit is due, because it's not even like it was when my mother was diagnosed in 1980. There have been massive improvements.
I only know the experience of which I have. I do know that some of the chemo treatments that are available today are some of the same chemo treatments that your mother had access to. Science moves slowly. It takes a lot of research, a lot of money to fund science. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a shill for the medical industry, so I can't speak on all the intricacies. I do know that recently a new treatment access is launched for my specific type of diagnosis. So I know that things are happening, but what I can tell you from my personal experience, and I can only speak on behalf of myself, I had an appointment yesterday, actually a 3-month check-in, which is, you have those all the time for what it seems like. I call my oil, you know, my oil checks, go in and see what's going on. But I stopped by to see my nurses. I actually took a picture and posted on Facebook because they're the heroes that I didn't know I needed. And you're not, for me, I was never a number. I was a human, and the compassion that I received was next to none. In fact, I can tell a very specific story. Obviously, children are not allowed access into cancer facilities because of low counts and how scary it can be for a lot of patients. But one day, Siri is trying to talk to me. Okay, one day, something was obviously not right, and I couldn't explain what was going on, but I knew something was wrong. And my husband had dropped me off. The very new baby was in the car with us, and I was supposed to go in and get a few, like have a very quick procedure that always followed chemo, and realized something was wrong. I ended up in the chair with getting fluids. It turns out I had a staph infection. I didn't know. But anyway, they snuck my baby into the building so I could hold my newborn while I was undergoing treatment. And that is very against protocol. So what I'm saying is there is never one size fits all when it comes to cancer treatment or just medical. But what I found is the workers, the nurses, the doctors, you know, remove billing from the equation and the politics and remove all of that. The actual healthcare workers, man, they are passionate about making sure that you get to fire them. The first thing my oncologist said is, I can't wait for you to fire me in 5 years. I'm so much looking forward to that day.
Well, in all honesty, I'm sorry, Jenny, but you know, the unsung heroes of the past year and a half, nurses mm-hmm. have to be at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Yeah. Leave corruption of the medical community out of the equation. That has nothing to do with the nurses who put themselves in harm's way to go provide medical care because they love nursing. And where nurses get screwed up is when they're dealing with bureaucracies and politics instead of just taking care of people, which is what they all sign up for. So we have to take our hats off to all of those individuals in the healthcare system that just want to provide and help for people. Like, how much did it aid you in healing that day against a staph infection because you could hold in your arms what you love most in the world? Because so much of it is mental. Well, it's not only mental, it's when you are at ease, your immune system is relaxed mm-hmm. and you're not mm-hmm. stressed. It helps in the healing process. And there was a nurse, one nurse had the idea to say, hey, let's get Brooke's baby in here, and made it happen.
Yeah, she was definitely there. Just saying, like, my doctor, my surgeon is is top 5 favorite humans in the entire world for me. And he said the day that, you know, Elsie was 2 days old, our first meeting about cancer was in my recovery room in labor and delivery on the maternity floor. And he said, your only job this week is to be Elsie's mom. And my team will personally make all of your appointments for test week. You do nothing but raise this baby. And when people started calling to confirm the appointments that I didn't even know what type of testing I would need, like that, I had no idea. Like I was in shock. And when people would call to schedule my PET scan or my MRI or my mug of heart scan, they'd say, hi, Dr. Frame said that Elsie's mom needed this and we were to only give her the best care. And so I feel like sometimes our medical team, you know, get a bad rap for they're only out for the money or making a lot of money to drive a fancy car. And man, there's always bad actors, but man, if you get the MVP Marvel squad, like though there are always people who are passionate about making lives better. And I think what people don't talk about enough is if your doctor isn't great, you can fire them. You can go to a different doctor.
And that was kind of where I was headed with self-advocacy. Because you had to really step up at one point during the entire process.
I did.
When you first found the lump. Do you want to go into that and give some tips on how to self-advocate?
100%. So thanks for bringing that up, Jenny, because sometimes I overlook that that was the most integral piece of this entire wild fiasco. And that is, I noticed a lump while pregnant and I brought it up multiple times. In fact, Trent, before you and I saw each other at that conference in Lexington, I knew that there was something wrong and I brought it up to my doctor multiple times and they said it was nothing to worry about. A few days before Elsie was born and I was officially diagnosed, I had actually taken my shirt off in my 38-week doctor appointment and said, I'm not leaving this office until you examine this because something is not right. And what I've learned is we are our only best advocate, and not just medically, professionally, personally, for our morals, for our standards. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to quote, yes, I am 100% quoting that 90s song that we love. If you don't stand for something, you're going to fall for anything. And that really comes for your personal health as well. You can only do what's best for you the best way. So don't be scared of doctors. They're just real people too.
All right, Elsie's mom, I have to take a break. I'm no longer calling you Brooke. I just think I'm going to call you Elsie's mom from now on because Perfect. That's what it's about. Perfect. Lone Creek Cattle Company providing opportunities for cattlemen. This is all about making sure the cattleman gets a fair share. We can look at what is wrong in today's beef structure and how much money is being made other than the person who owns the animal. But what Lone Creek is doing is saying we're going to put together a system that rewards the producer properly, the proper percentage of the consumer's food dollar. It's all based around that tenderness gene. Get more details about how you can be a part of the certified Piedmontese system at LoneCreekCattleCo.com. Marlon Wills, the man with the plan. We'll be back with the second half of Rural Route with Elsie's mom after this. Welcome back, Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Jenny Swigert and Elsie's mom. I had to interrupt you there, Elsie's mom, otherwise known as Brooke. Did you complete that self-advocacy? Because, hey, that's the moral of the story all the time. You always have, particularly when it comes to health, you have these intuitions and you got to follow them. And when you know there's something that needs to be paid attention to, because everybody's life is busy and they think they got to be here and there and everywhere. It's easy to miss details, quite frankly. I can talk about missing details, but you clearly knew that this was something. And the reason you're walking through it today, Elsie's mom, is because there's somebody out there right now in your place that you were that needs you to give them the confidence to say, hey, you need to look at this.
So just yesterday, I received a direct message on Instagram from someone who has been following me since I was diagnosed, so for 2 years, and she was diagnosed on Monday, and she said she went in and had a conversation with her doctor because I preach, we don't wait, we don't delay, there's no reason to put off something just because it's scary or hard. People jump out of airplanes because it's scary and dumb. So why would we put off knowing? And she is on her treatment plan and will start chemo as early as next week because she didn't wait and she advocated for herself. And for me, that's one person. I have hundreds of people who sent direct messages and we navigate the scary questions. And for me, I'm going to keep leaving breadcrumbs behind because I would have given anything to see an example of someone living in the light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And if that's a piece of my story, why not? I'm going to mini squirrel here. That's what I'm good at. I was at a conference in Austin, Texas a few years ago, and someone said specifically about women in the professional workspace, she said, where's the good old women's club? And you know, everyone talks about the good old boys club, but why isn't there a good old women's club? Because women have been in the workplace for quite a long time that there's no reason that shouldn't exist. And while I'm not talking about specifically, I feel like that thought process is something that I thought about in regards to sharing my story. I know that's a cliche phrase.
Elsie's mom, sorry to interrupt you, but it's called the quilting bee. That's the old women's club.
Oh, okay. We don't quilt anymore. Do we?
Well, you need to get back to quilting. Go ahead.
Oh, you quilt me. You quilt for. Anyway, so I thought about this and I was like, listen, if my job is to reach behind and help pull someone through that bald, no eyelash, no eyebrow phase, like, hey, I can do that. Because the truth is, not everyone's going to make it through that. And if you're really lucky, you know, sometimes there's no rhyme or reason why you get to go to the other, you know, make it through that. But if I can help someone there, I think that that's just as important or even more important than some of the other ways I could spend my time.
I know I'm taking about two steps backwards, but that's one aspect of breast cancer that has not changed since my mother was diagnosed. I think it was 81, is early detection. Early detection is the key.
Yeah. So there is a movement on Instagram called Feel It on the First. So you got to get to first base on the first of the month. And if you happen to get on that side of Instagram, you'll notice that there's a lot of young cancer survivors feeling themselves up and advocating for others to do the same. It's because it's not happening.
And we have a news station here. It's actually been for years that on the 25th, it's News 25, and on the 25th of the month, that's when they advocate for doing breast self-checks. And we're also like the home of Susan G. Komen and where the foundation was started, and all of that. So I think that that's probably integrated there somehow. What if you are a patient, you're sick, you've been on chemo, you're nauseous, horrible, and you've got some kind of procedure coming up and insurance will not cover it? How do you self-advocate in that type of situation? Is there a delegate? Is there somebody at the hospital that you can refer to?
So I think that's a great question. And why I don't know specifically, I could tell you what I would do in my situation. And that is every year assigned an advocate on behalf of the hospital, like a caseworker. You have to, if you haven't had conversations, you have to go find that person. You can also call insurance yourself. It's an open line. You can call them as many times as you want. You can email them. You can tweet them. You can call your congressman. You can call your news station. There's no right or wrong way to tackle that situation. The answer is just don't stop tackling that situation. That's just the way our medical field is today. I can tell you I only had one situation where I had a pre-approved surgery that I had some billing situation. And for me, it was my double mastectomy. It was when my breasts were actually removed. And insurance in the hospital had a little bit of a tiff on that bill wasn't going to get paid. And when that $75,000 bill showed up at my house, I was thinking, absolutely not, 0% am I paying this bill? And it took me getting on the phone and calling the hospital, calling insurance, calling the hospital, calling insurance, and literally being the mediator for that bill to get paid. And that part of a cancer diagnosis or journey or whatever you want to call it, that's not something that anyone really tells you that you'll be doing. That's just, unfortunately, a name of the game.
And I think that's the same across most medical illnesses. Or I know I've dealt with that with Crohn's, actually, especially lately since COVID. So I think that's good advice for anyone. Can you back up to, this wasn't the first time cancer had affected your life.
When absolutely. I can for sure talk about that. So I would like to say I've always been on the offense when it comes to cancer. Trent, I'm sure you know you've had conversations with your doctor because of the family history that you have with your relatives who have gone through cancer. For me, it was the same. My father passed away from cancer when he was 25 years old from colon cancer, which is not related to breast cancer. But I have always been proactive in the conversations I have with my doctors because of that. And that's just always something that I knew to do. I recently learned that I am a carrier of the BRCA1 gene mutation, which that gave me a very high percentage risk of getting cancer in my lifetime. Had I known that, had that been something that I was able to be on the offense, my story could have looked a lot different. I would have been eligible for a lot of different preventative measures. But I think the kicker here is you can't really be on the offense if you don't discuss hard things with your family members. And so I think there are a lot of family members across the world who maybe deal and tackle with something personally and keep it to themselves and don't share it with family members. And the only way to be offensive when it comes to your medical history and to be your own advocate is to know what cards are on the table.
Right. And you, yeah. I mean, you had always just been, I remember we did podcasts because you were prepared that one day you will probably end up with colon cancer. And then when this happened,
sure.
I know I was just like, what in the world? No, what? And I'm sure you were like beyond that. This wasn't and you're a planner and you have a radar, you have yeah. a 5-year plan, 2-year plan. This was nowhere near that, what you had expected. What were you going to ask Trent?
Well, I had a couple things, but I was going to say, you know, that is the future of all medicine. And I kind of delved into it a bit in the first segment when I talked about Neogen and what they do genomically. But, you know, Libby, who I'm going to get to see, our oldest, is a registered dietitian. And she's working towards looking at those genetic parameters of individuals and what their predisposition is for health. And in her case, she's looking mostly at type 3 diabetes, which leads to Alzheimer's. But we're going to continue to look at those genomics and know that you have this marker that means you have a higher probability of actually contracting, if that's the right word. I don't think that's the right word, because I think those cancer cells are always there if you have that marker. But you can do things to minimize the impact, and that's exactly what I heard Elsie's mom say she's doing.
Yes, and so for me, what's changed in our family heritage, unfortunately, is now we know I was able to pass on that information. We now know that my first cousin, my only first cousin on this side of my family, she was able to get tested. She does have that genetic marker, so she is able to be on the offense. We also know that when it is appropriate, we can look down that path for Elsie to see if we also need to be on the offense for her. And I think it changes how we're able to self-advocate. And I think that is a powerful tool. I think it's the mental weight of it is sometimes scary, but data helps us be successful.
And then the other thing that I wanted to get back to that you brought up, and I think we have enough time to do it because 2 minutes,
sure.
How long did it take you to decide, or were you given the choice of the double mastectomy?
I decided within 2 seconds of hearing that I no longer needed my breasts. And for me, I didn't even know exactly what type of cancer, but I was 6 hours from having a baby on the outside. And in that moment, there was nothing that I needed to keep in exchange for gambling with going to heaven early. I can tell you.
It's not that easy for others.
Sure. No, I completely really? Understand. I have my most expensive assets, as I can tell you, are my genetically engineered lady lumps and, you know, in a swimsuit and a shirt, they look fine. And I wouldn't wish this very expensive procedure. I wouldn't electively choose it. But science has come a very long way, and our surgeons are very, very skilled. And the alternatives are not as scary as you might think that they are.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the pros and cons, and a lot of times what looks like a con is actually a pro.
Right. I will tell you, it's not all rainbows and unicorns. Another hard choice I had to make because of knowing this genetic mutation that I carry is I preventatively had a full hysterectomy because the risk of ovarian cancer that I carry is very high, and you can't get ovarian cancer if you don't have ovaries. And so when my child, before she even turned 1, I became full-on Blanche Devereaux. I am officially a golden girl, and I can tell you all about hot flashes.
Yeah, well, we already knew, Elsie's mom, that you're a golden girl. All you have to do is look into your eyes, and we see so much shine and brightness. It's all beautiful. We will take a break. Arise USA, a magnificent meeting last night in Nevada County, California. You know, California is not all whack jobs. There's about 1% whack jobs, 99% great people. And we found them last night. Arise USA, coming to a town near you. Last segment of Roll Route after this. Welcome back. Roll Route. Getting ready for a red shirt Friday with a bit of burnt orange in it tomorrow. Elsie's mom joining us from, you are in Payne County, aren't you, Brooke? You live in Payne?
My roots are in Payne County, but I am now in Sequoia County eastern Oklahoma.
All right.
Yeah.
Jenny Swigert. She just lives in Payne because she chooses to be in Illinois. All right, so I got to get to this because Jenny has taught me one very valuable thing in the past, however long she's been here, and that is that as much as she's had the inconvenience, and that's a very light word for what Crohn's disease has brought to her in her life, it has opened up and enriched her life in the community of people that she surrounded herself with that has shared the same experiences. And I think it's worth spending a little time here and how when you go, you're already told us, Elsie's mom, that you're on Instagram and you're finding that community of people. So the silver lining in a horrible storm clearly is the community that you find and the people that you put around you that empower you because you can work at it together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a couple weeks ago, there were three of us cancer mamas, and we live in states all across the country. And I call us cancer mamas because we had newborns and bald heads all at the same time. Our diagnosis were within weeks of each other. And one of our cancer mama friends, her luck is not quite going the same way ours is, and she's still in treatment. And the three of us flew across the country, got our tailgating signs, and we tailgated for her and surprised her at cancer treatment. And I wouldn't have even considered.
Turn around and look, we're out here.
Yeah, we were Instagramming her. And finally her nurses actually saw us out the window and helped us get her. But I wouldn't have even considered that I would be, in Tacoma, Washington, tailgating at a cancer center 2 years ago. But there is something like no one knows what it's like to be in the trenches of something so terrifying unless they've also been in the trenches. And I wouldn't give this community up for the world. It's a terrible club filled with amazing people.
That's a very good way of putting it. And I know the last time I was hospitalized was the beginning of April, and I was on pain meds, and I could not, and what was happening was not like going the right way. Like they weren't reading my chart. I think emergency room medicine is so much different than what like a specialty and, like a whole breast cancer group of people. But they hadn't even they didn't even realize I had had Crohn's for 25 years, and they wanted to send me home. And I'm like, can you just look at my chart? And so then I have a text group, and the ladies were like, no, you need to say this. You need to do this. Demand this. And so I had that support there. And that is priceless, as you said. I mean, there's some days I don't get through the day in a good mood without them. And we text every single day, and we're not in the same states. Mm-hmm. It's just nice to know that there's somebody there that
you're in the same state of mind.
You know what I will tell you, and this was really hard for me to wrap my head around, but when you get breast cancer, when you get the pink cancer, man, everyone loves to support the pink cancer. Ribbons, pink on October, save the boobs. Like it is a thing. But what I didn't know about this amazing support is I never heard the term pink washing before. I didn't know what that meant. And what I've recently learned is sometimes when our best intentions are to support the 1 in 8 women in our lives who are going through breast cancer, is that there are a lot of companies who are using a pink ribbon for marketing, and it's not actually doing anything. It's not going to research. It's not going to help someone buy a wig so they don't scare their children their young children, you know, they help normalize. It's not helping paying medical bills. It's not helping cover the car payment because you're out of work, et cetera. So that has really opened my eyes that there are ways to support your friends and neighbors through advocacy and wearing a pink ribbon, but reading the label to make sure that it's going to, that funds are being directed somewhere that are really making a difference.
Yeah. And it's not just a feel good marketing campaign that really
absolutely
doing a whole lot. How did you learn about so much about the genetics? Cause you know so much and like way beyond what I know about all of it, like the different types of genes, the different types of breast cancer. Can you go into that?
Absolutely. So before I thought breast cancer was breast cancer. When you receive any type of diagnosis, they send you through what's called, I call it chemo 101, the class where you have to learn all of the fun stuff, but also there's a cancer 101 where they explain to you, how cancer works and subtypes. And the best way to describe how cancer operates is to think about the agricultural industry. If you were to say agricultural industry, it encompasses a lot of subsectors. And within a subsector, there are specialties. So for example, if you were to look at agriculture, you're going to go to cattle. You're going to separate that into specialties of cow-calf, fat grounding, feedlot, et cetera. And then within that, you have the hired hands or the team members or the owners who do accounting and actually are working the pens and who are ordering supplies and ordering inventory. And that's really how cancer works. And so it really is specialized. So listen, I get a lot of really random people who say, they'd cure cancer if they could save money. But my question back to you is, which cancer? Because cancer isn't cancer. Like, there are so many types of cancer that it is, they have cured some of them, just a small percentage of them. And so it just takes a lot of being open to listening and researching and staying away from Wikipedia and striving more towards the Mayo.orgs of the world for your research.
I never use Wikipedia. I don't even look at it because it's so lacking credibility. But I want to back up to something that you brought up that irritates me to no end, and that is that companies or individuals that use something like a pink ribbon just for marketing purposes without contributing to the solution. So I want to ask either one of you, who is Terry Wheatley?
I feel like I just failed pop quiz.
Yeah.
Well, you did on purpose. You don't know who Terry Wheatley is because she is a breast cancer survivor, Paso Robles, California. She owns a winery, and she's the one who decided to come up with a wine called Tough Enough to Wear Pink, which was then adopted by entire rodeo community. Nobody knows Terry Wheatley's name because she didn't do it to gain exposure or for marketing. She did it to bring awareness. And think about how impactful just in our circles that whole Tough Enough to Wear Pink campaign has become. And this lady did it out of a passion to make a difference instead of saying, I'm going to do this for marketing purposes. Those are the kind of people that we need to focus on.
Yeah, 100%.
It just so happens I've had her on the air before, so I was a little up to speed on what was going on with that. But we need to sort those out. And anybody that we need to call out, those companies or people that simply use for a marketing campaign, we need to call them out and say, you're ridiculous. You should go broke. Don't go on the backs of some family's terrible club. That was your term, Elsie's mom. You said a terrible club with wonderful people.
So last fall during October, there was a company who released a sports bra line, and they said they were donating these pink sports bras to women who had recently undergone a double mastectomy. And the cancer community, those of us in the trenches, I'm not going to say we got our pitchforks, but we got our replies ready because when you have body parts cut off from you, there's no way you're putting on a sports bra. Like, you're physically unable to lift your arms, let alone squeeze through a sports bra. And so it was very clear that they had, A, not consulted anyone in the cancer community, and B, that they were just doing it for marketing. But we allowed our voices to make a difference, and they did reroute what they were doing, and they operated differently because of the pressure that we were able to put on them. We didn't cancel them. We gave them an opportunity to make better choices.
And that is so important right there.
And I also have to add that I've seen organizations, nonprofits, that really use the disease or the challenge as their fundraising tool instead of actually providing solutions. You got to sort through those that are really making a difference too.
Yeah.
All right, Elsie's mom, we're down to the last minute and a half. You have given us so much profound thought today. I want you to take us home with what you want every family to know out there.
I want you to know that you're not alone. The odds are not in your favor that cancer is going to be a part of your equation, and know that there are always silver linings. There are good advocates and good people who are going to make your life better, and it's not your fault that you have cancer. You didn't do anything wrong. It's not something you ate. It's not something you didn't eat. And the second is, I have to share this. I have a t-shirt for sale on Rural Gone Urban where the proceeds are going directly to the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And they are very serious in focusing on research for stage four. No one passes away from stage one. All those who elevate to heaven are they're from a stage four diagnosis. So it's something near and dear to my heart. And if you want to tell cancer to duck off, I have the merchandise for you.
You're a horrible marketer, Elsie's mom, because if you were really good, you'd be wearing one of these hoodies right now so that people could see it as we go through this.
And as I would as well, but neither of us did.
Fair. It's because I actually wore those shirts yesterday to see my surgeon, so it's in the dirty pile, and I just didn't know that you would want the toddler dirt all over mine.
Oh, we don't care if you have a dirty t-shirt on.
Hey, don't think that I don't have I don't have graphics ready to go for my social channels this afternoon. So I wouldn't say it was a total loss, but definitely.
Okay, once again, Brooke, before we're out of time, where do people go if they want to get one of these shirts, t-shirts, or hoodies?
RuralGoneUrban.com.
RuralGoneUrban.com. From one beautiful individual, Brooke Taylor. Elsie's mom's what we call her from now on. We've successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. Jenny Swaggart, Elsie's mom, Trent, all say, remember, all roads do lead to a rural route. Let's do a little recap about the beef business. You have the opportunity to be a part of a branded beef program called Certified Piedmontese. And you test every one of those calves with the Neogen technology to verify that they do possess the myostatin gene. It's all about a known quality. And we heard Brooke talk about how disease and markers for particular disease susceptibilities as part of the future. So it's about how much information and data can we put together. And then the farmer needs to capture the added value benefit. Details at LoneCreekCalico.com and Neogen.com. See you tomorrow.